Hey there, Stackers. We are trying to meet some more of you. We're going to be here in our hometown of Detroit watching March Madness together. OG is going to be here. I'll be here. Richie, our producer, of course, my mom's neighbor, Doug, wouldn't miss it because we're buying appetizers and drinks for everyone. We will be in West Bloomfield, Michigan. We tried to pick a spot that's very close to highway access. And if you come north on M5 from the 696, 275, 96 interchange. And for those of you outside of Detroit, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But if you're in Detroit, you know exactly where I am. Just head north on M5. That dumps you off near Maple. And the address we're going to be at will be at Jameson's International Tavern from 2 o'clock to 7 this Friday. We're going to watch a couple games. We're going to give away some fun stuff. We got some books. We got some swag. It's going to be a good time. 2 to 7 this Friday, March 22nd. Please shoot me an email if you can come or let me know in the Facebook group. However, I'm just trying to make sure we have enough tables. Looks like we've got 8 people coming early and a few people coming late. So just let me know roughly when you're going to be there. By the way, if you can't do that, but you can still make it, just come out. Don't feel like if you did an RSVP that you can't crash our party. Come crash it. That's this Friday, March 22nd, Jameson's International Tavern, 6139 Haggerty Road in West Bloomfield. Hope to see all of you Detroit peeps there.
Hi, I'm Kathy Jones. When I'm not listening to Money in the Morning podcast, I'm stacking Benjamins.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and it's time to get out the trampoline. Why? Because it's springtime. I'll share with you later my big surprise to help Joe's mom celebrate. But first, today, the guys are celebrating by answering your letters. Plus, in our headline segment, ever wonder why you should not roll over your old 401k to an IRA? We'll review one headline that shares some reasons. Plus, we'll throw out the Haven Lifeline and save time for some of my regionally famous trivia. Sure, as long as your region is southern Wisconsin. Anyway, now, two guys who mom says aren't spring chickens anymore, if you know what I mean. It's Joe and OJ.
I take offense to that, Douglas. I am very young and attractive, and people like me.
Young at heart.
Easy. I'm sitting right here, man. Welcome to the We Are Young podcast. And happy spring, by the way. I am Joe Sulcy, High Average Joe Money on Twitter, just so you know who's who sitting here at the card table. Welcome to spring, my friend.
I don't normally watch the news up in Detroit there. I usually just fly in for the episodes and fly home real quick. Do your meteorologists talk about the difference between actual spring and meteorological spring? They are confusing the hell out of my kids down here.
You shouldn't do that when I'm drinking coffee.
Well, technically, spring doesn't start till March 21st, but we like to say March 1st is the beginning of spring. That's a meteorological spring, so but here, it's not spring, right?
Here in Michigan, spring starts June 15th, right?
Like winter, spring, summer.
I'm so happy we are taking people's letters today. We should get started so that people don't want to murder us. Oh, by the way, Stacky Benjamin's brought to you by Murder Book.
Yeah.
That was maybe the clunkiest one ever. That's a new trime podcast. You ever had a trime podcast before?
This is a trying podcast.
It's very trying right now. New true crime. I think I made a new genre though, OG. True crime trime. New crime podcast hosted by bestselling author Michael Connelly. It's available on Apple Podcast, wherever you're listening right now to us. Also, be sure to check out Dark Sacred Night, Michael Connelly's latest number one bestseller featuring detectives Harry Bosch and Renee Ballard. How many bestsellers this guy had? About 187?
It seems like you're exaggerating a smidge, but not many.
I may be only exaggerating by a bajillion. So thanks to Mr. Connelly and his publisher for supporting Stacky Benjamins. We are supporting you today. because we're answering your letters. Lately, as you've noticed, we've had a lot of letters episode because we are working through a little backlog that we had. We didn't have a letters episode for much of January, and man, we're paying for it now. But actually, these are so fun. Some of my favorite episodes. So why don't we get the party started with a couple headlines first?
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Our first headline comes to us from NAPA-NET. This is the National Association of Plan Advisors, the people that do 401k plans, pension plans, that kind of thing. Wanted to get your take on this, OG. This is written by Allison Wheelabob. ARA reminds Nevada about ERISA dash again. I clicked on this at first thinking this was going to be some inside baseball nerdery, and it is a little bit, but if you hang in here with me, there's some really good stuff. The Silver State, Nevada, managed to overlook the long history of ERISA preemption in its recent draft fiduciary regulations. Once again, the American Retirement Association has brought this to their attention. By the way, before we get too far into inside baseball and nerdery, can you explain to people, OG, what ERISA is kind of generally and what it means for you and I?
Well, ERISA is a law that was written, I think, in 1974, somewhere around there. And it's all about employee retirement plan protections. So it's a list of things that workplace retirement plans have to follow to make sure that everybody is on the same page. It's run by the Department of Labor, and you do not want to run afoul of the Department of Labor.
Yeah. Well, and it seems that the state of Nevada is trying hard to run afoul of the Department of Labor.
Did they put their retirement plan on red? Let it go?
Oh, no. It gets better than that. Yeah.
Oh, it did not. It did not.
You'd expect that in Nevada, wouldn't you?
It didn't double down on an eight.
What do you mean you can't get the Oakmark Fund, Fidelity Contra Fund, the Vanguard S&P 500, and 25 through 49?
Yeah, exactly. With a single chip on each one.
Right.
Double zero.
The comments came in response to draft regulations issued in mid-January by Nevada's Office of the Secretary of State Securities Division based on legislation enacted by the state's legislature in 2017, the first of several states that have done this. Several states have done what I'm about to explain. In February 28th, American Retirement Association answered the Nevada Securities Division's call for comments on a proposed regulation that would fundamentally change the legal obligations of broker-dealers and investment advisors doing business in Nevada by imposing a fiduciary duty on them. This marks the, wait for it, third time Nevada officials are hearing the American Retirement Association's voice regarding Nevada's fiduciary law. The comment letter echoes the ARA's previous comments and testimony before the Nevada Secretary of State on the underlying legislation. Here's the background. For many years, Nevada law imposed a fiduciary duty on financial planners, anyone who provides investment advice for a fee. But get this, it spared broker-dealers, sales representatives, and investment advisors. In 2017, Nevada legislators expanded the definition of financial planner to expressly include all those professionals as well, subjecting them to a fiduciary duty toward clients. The enacting legislation permits the Nevada Securities Administrator to adopt regulations concerning these rules, clarifying what acts, practices, and courses of business are and are not breaches of that new fiduciary duty. In response to this request for comments, the ARA's comment letter reiterates ARA's long-held belief that financial professionals who provide investment advice should be held to a fiduciary standard that requires their recommendations to be in the best interest of their clients. But, and this is the big but, and by the way, before we get to the but here, we might have some new listeners that don't know what this fiduciary thing's all about, OG. What does fiduciary mean?
All I know is I just keep on hearing you saying duty, and then you just said but three times. Nice. Fiduciary is the F word in finance, and it's quite often misunderstood and certainly misused by many people. But the end result is that if you are a fiduciary, you are responsible to do what's in your client's best interest with their money or with your advice toward their money or something like that. So that varies greatly. You'd say, well, that makes sense. That's what everybody does. And that's not true. The corollary is what most people are held to, which is the suitability rule. And the whole industry, the whole financial planning industry, or the whole financial advice industry, I should say, has a list of suitable guidelines for each product. For example, it's suitable for an 85-year-old widow to put no more than 20% of her portfolio in something completely illiquid. That's a suitable recommendation. Well, for most of us, we would understand that that's probably not in her best interest. So there's a different standard of care there, basically.
Thank you very much for that. And for those of you who are kind of lost in all this now, in this jargon, here's where we're at so far in the story. Nevada says anybody selling financial products needs to have a fiduciary standard. They need to act in the best interest of their client, as OG so eloquently told us. And the American Retirement Association has said, not so fast, cowboy. And they said, we like this idea of a fiduciary standard. We really like it. And earlier on, we explained what ERISA is, these rules that the U.S. Department of Labor has. And this is where this gets interesting. Finally, having that standard, this is what the comment letter says. Having that fiduciary standard be a function of state law is problematic for ERISA plans and their service providers, the letter explains, due to the potential for conflicting fiduciary standards between state law standards and the fiduciary standards already in effect under ERISA. After outlining the concept of ERISA preemption, the letter explains that without exemption of ERISA-covered plans, duplicative regulation, investor confusion, legal conflicts, and compliance challenges will result without additional protections for investors. The inevitable compliance and legal costs which result will mean higher costs for consumers. In the letter, ARA makes recommendations on how the proposed rule could be modified to maintain its intent to increase customer protections for IRAs and other investor accounts while avoiding conflict with ERISA. Significantly, ARA is not advocating to decrease any protections for consumers, which, by the way, is what some of the broker-dealer industry is hopefully trying to do. They're trying to slow down the train here. I find this interesting, OG. The American Retirement Association, all for more fiduciary standards, but this idea, state and local governments now running into friction against each other, because of that, and I'd never thought about this before, that also, I believe, is going to make this take a long, long, long time for us to get some fiduciary rule that bleeds all the way through.
Well, we started a couple of years ago with the Department of Labor ruling, and then that got overturned. Well, it didn't really get overturned. It just never was enacted, so to speak. It just was let to expire, effectively. What was really interesting, of course, about all that is all of the stories that came out from all of the big companies saying, well, you know, we always do what's in our clients' best interests, you know, but we're definitely going to prove it now. We are going to get rid of commissions on these accounts, or we're going to do this, we're going to do that, whatever. And companies spent tens and hundreds of millions of dollars getting ready for the Department of Labor rule 2 years ago, and it never happened. And now what you're starting to see is you're starting to see the pendulum come back the other way, where companies who previously had said commissions are bad, and we're going to do what's in our client's best interest, and we're going to prove it. Now this is coming back the other way going, hey, you know, some people like commissions, and we might as well do it if some people want to do it. And this is the problem, is that different states are going to have different rules, and it's going to be very difficult for advisors to keep track of them all. I mean, you can have that standard of care of do no harm, right? Like if you're the financial planner equivalency of a doctor, right? Do no harm. But the reality is that each state's going to have its own rules. And while I disagree with the logic train of this group here, like, well, we can't have it because it would just be too complicated for everybody to keep track of and it would cost too much money. There is going to be some issues with that where, you know, you have a client in Oregon and a client in Washington, and they both have different rules about what defines fiduciary or what are acceptable practices. And it's going to be very, very, very difficult. The argument that big companies have is it's going to disserve the smaller consumer, right? Because you're just going to say as a firm, well, we just aren't going to help people that have little bits of money because we can't keep track of all of the different rules in all the different states. So we're only going to work with rich people in Washington versus, you know.
Well, and that's what the ARA is saying here. They're saying, listen, this is going to drive up fees because trying to stay compliant in 50 different states is going to, you know, create this big machine at all these big companies that has to check a bunch of boxes and figure out how to make sure advisors play by all the rules.
It's going to be very difficult for some of them. I don't like that rhetoric. I don't like that reasoning because I don't think it's going to be as bad, but it's something to hang your hat on if you're a private interest group that gets a whole bunch of money from companies that charge commissions and you can make a reasonably sound argument that sounds good.
Our next headline comes to us from Forbes. Somebody brought this to our attention on our basement Facebook group. If you'd like to hang out with us, by the way, on Facebook, it's stackybenjamins.com/basement. It's a long URL. That's the easiest way to get there. 12 reasons not to roll your 401k into an IRA. Did you see this?
Nope.
This is written by a gentleman named Robert Lawton. American workers often change jobs and must decide what to do with their 401k balances at their prior employers. I've worked as a 401k plan consultant for more than 30 years with companies like Apple and AT&T, so I'm an advocate for 401k plan participants and have dealt with this situation many times. For the vast majority of 401k plan participants, in my experience, it does not make sense to roll over their 401k balances from a prior employer into an individual retirement account or IRA. He's saying, don't do it.
Don't do it. Okay.
And here's his reasoning why. Number one, stable value funds are not available.
Okay.
True.
Oh, shucks.
True or false?
In name only, true.
Yeah. And the longer answer is that you can have a money market, a cash account.
Yeah. U.S. Treasury fund. You can do all sorts of stuff, but okay.
Yes.
The name stable value, you can't find generally anywhere. I got that.
I'm not going to walk through all of the stuff. We'll link to this in our show notes at stackybenjamins.com if you want to dive into this. Number two, IRA advisors may not be fiduciaries. We just talked about fiduciaries in our first headline, true or false?
Okay, true.
Yes. And I actually think, and if we stop on that one for just a second, OG, I do think he's right here. I think for a lot of people that are confused by all this, I think it's easy for a salesperson who's not a fiduciary charging very high commissions to dupe somebody into moving them into something that may be, as you talked about earlier, maybe suitable, but might not be fiduciary worthy, I guess is the phrase.
You said it's difficult or not difficult?
It is not difficult.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, they're confused by all the terminology and the jargon. And so somebody can very easily do that. Number three, performance differentials are substantial. Listen to this. According to the Center for Retirement Research, the average return in an IRA for the 12-year period of their study was 2.2%. The average return in a 401k plan for the same period was 3.1%.
Okay. I think there's other explanations, but I think, like, for example, you're putting money in your 401k for that 12-year period. So most people don't contribute to IRAs.
I think this is just the return on investment is 3.1 versus 2.2.
I understand, but if you have the opportunity to contribute multiple times, you're going to have an opportunity at better returns also. That kind of makes sense.
Well, and I also think, once again, if you don't know what you're doing, I think there's a lot of people that roll their stuff out of a 401k and do incredibly stable IRAs. And by incredibly stable, I mean they understand market risk, but they don't understand opportunity cost and they don't understand interest rate risk. And so they move their money into investments that don't make sense. Give you an example. Tons of money flows into equity indexed annuities.
Yeah.
Which has far less to do with the index than you hope it would, by the way.
Yeah. Number one, or had a record year last year.
Yeah.
In new money.
Yeah. And the returns on those, the past returns, don't match the load of junk that the salesperson's selling you. They don't.
Yeah. About 3%.
Yeah. Which is better than the number here. I mean, people getting 2.2. So number four, IRA rollover equals higher fees.
Okay. Maybe.
Here's a problem I have. In an IRA, I have the ability to know exactly what my fees are. I can move money wherever I want. My fees can be incredibly transparent or they can be hidden, but I get to choose. In a 401k, I had an administrator at Cheryl's old job in Texarkana tell me that the 401k was free.
Which is always funny because you think about, like, all of the stuff that goes into the decision-making, the record-keeping, the reporting, the technology, the statements you get, the fund options, somebody's got to manage all of that. Somebody's got to keep track of it all. Somebody's got to make sure that the forms are filled out correctly and audited on an annual basis and tax filings filed every year. No one's making any money doing that. Everybody's completely benevolent. They're like, I'm independently wealthy. You know what I'm going to choose to do with my life? Help people with 401k record keeping. Of course not. It's silly to say.
I can't figure out how this guy didn't know it wasn't free. I have no idea. Apparently he bought whatever the, and by the way, no offense to, well, I won't even say the name of the company. Let's just say it was a big insurance company.
Right.
Big monster, old insurance company. Doing it for free out of the kindness of their heart. Everybody walks in with halos and just manages your money for nothing. Really? Really? Yeah. This is what I don't like about 401ks is how it's so difficult to find the fees. You actually have a site that you use to look at 401k fees.
Yeah, there's a couple of different websites out there that kind of give some pretty broad brushstrokes of costs and things like that. It's called, one of them comes to mind is BrightScope. You can type in your company's 401k plan there. But really, to get an exact number, you have to go into the documents and you have to go into the account itself and figure out, you know, where all the bodies are buried, so to speak. It's really quite amazing. It should not come as a surprise to a lot of people that if your workplace plan has $15 million in assets in it, that the fees for that plan are $250,000 a year. Now, whether or not it should be $175,000 or $325,000, you know, that's just a matter of, you know, efficiency, I think, and who you're dealing with. But I'm telling you that if your workplace plan has $15 million in total assets, the total fees are somewhere between $150,000 and $300,000 a year. And somebody's writing that check. It might be the company or it might be you.
Number five, average 401k balance limits options. The average 401k account balance in 2017 for the average American worker was a little more than 100,000. Unfortunately, there aren't many advisors who are eager to work with IRA rollover accounts this size. So if you're rolling over 100,000 bucks, you don't have enough options to make it worth your while.
Well, I mean, that is something. There's plenty of options to use, but from an advisor standpoint, that's one of the things that we dealt with in my business is that reality of how most advisors have bigger and bigger and bigger minimum relationship sizes and how to justify that, how to fix it.
But you know, we do have listeners to the show screaming, I can still go to Vanguard. I can still go into those free Fidelity funds. I can still move it to M1 Finance. I mean, yeah. I have all of these options that I can do.
Yeah, but he's talking about from an advisor relationship. All of those are true. Betterment, Wealthfront, Vanguard, Schwab.
Yeah.
They all exist.
Yeah. Yeah. I can do all those things. Number six, objective investment advice options are few. I think we covered that one, but we also covered the definition of fiduciary and how you should ask that question. Number seven, IRA rollover balances are too small to meet minimums. I think we kind of covered that one. Transaction fees are likely with IRAs. Not always true. IRAs offer less protection from creditors and lawsuits.
Well, I mean, bankruptcy limitations on IRAs are 1,300,000 and some odd thousand, so you got some wiggle room.
Next is loans are not available.
True. Thank God.
Yeah, I know. That's a good thing. Think of other places to take money from than your retirement. Borrowing against your retirement is so expensive, so incredibly expensive. And number 12, rolling into your current employer's 401k is a much better option.
Well, that's not a reason. That's a summation, but okay.
Yes. Is it a summation that you agree with?
There can be reasons for it. And there's reasons against it. These are all clickbaity articles, of course, like the 10 things you must do today before you leave this morning.
Well, let's wrap it up with this one, though, OG. Here's the big thing from where I stand. This gentleman, Mr. Lawton, is a 401k advisor. Do you know how he gets paid?
I didn't catch that part that's what his job was.
He gets paid on money staying inside 401k plans. That's how he gets paid. So if you follow the money trail, it's very easy to see why Mr. Lawton would have these thoughts. Incredibly frustrating to me. The number of times during those 12 points where you went, yeah, okay. Yeah, but it's a bunch of half-truths. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. He isn't lying, but he's holding half of it behind his back.
Yeah.
And that drives me crazy. I think from where I sit, I personally like three things. Number one, any money that you need pre 59 and a half should stay in your retirement plan at work. If you're eligible to take that money out, if you're able to take that money out and spend it pre 59 and a half, if your goal is pre 59 and a half, because IRAs are difficult to get money out of pre 59 and a half. I think that's something everybody should look at, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number two is you should always use your 401k at the place where you're working, and then
yes,
have an IRA with all your other money so that you're not subject to the whims of your current 401k administrators on what funds they use, what your options are. Create your own. You have an unlimited playing field with an IRA. You can make horrible decisions like this guy says. You can make absolutely rottenness. You can make great decisions, and it's all up to you. So move the rest of your money to an IRA. Then you have one dashboard. And guess what's cool about the IRA? I can bend it around the areas that my 401k at the place I work, I can bend it around the options that aren't very good. Let's say that there's not a good international option at my work. I can then have more money in my IRA that's in a great international fund because I can choose anyone that I want. It's pretty awesome. Just have those two and
best
you're good.
Of both worlds.
Yeah. Like that way better than rolling it to your new 401k means that you're handcuffing yourself to exactly what those administrators want. You've no idea in most cases what the fees are. And I get that IRAs can have higher fees, like he's saying, but I don't want to, man, I'm ranty. How about this? It sounds like I'm getting all hot and bothered, OG, like I could murder somebody. I mean, don't get me wrong. I won't. I'm a kind and gentle soul, but thanks to Murder Book, the new true crime podcast hosted by bestselling author Michael Connelly for supporting Stacking Benjamins. Returning to his roots as a journalist, bestselling author Michael Connelly presents the true crime podcast Murder Book, working with the very detectives who inform his novels and his hit television show Bosch, which is if you haven't watched Bosch, hit pause, start watching Bosch, come back and finish this. I'm going to addict you on all Michael Connelly's work. The podcast explores real homicide cases not covered by mainstream media. Murder Book Season 1's The Telltale Bullet, and it dives into a 30-year-old Hollywood carjacking gone wrong that tests the limits of the American criminal justice system. Also for Michael Connelly, by the way, Dark Sacred Night is latest number one bestseller. By the way, I'm about a third through it. I'm getting on a plane in 2.5 hours, and I can't wait.
You're going to finish it.
I absolutely can't. Well, I read pretty slow, but yeah, that's going to make my trip to Orlando go very, very quickly. Dark Sacred Night is his latest number one best-selling feature. And of course, Detectives Harry Bosch and Renee Ballard are in it. You can find Dark Sacred Night wherever books are sold. It's funny because I will be transformed from being on this plane to immediately hanging out with Harry and Renee. Just absolutely love it. Be sure to check out Michael Connelly's new Murder Book podcast on Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcast, or at murderbookpodcast.com. That's murderbookpodcast.com. I think our takeaways here, OG, number one, when it comes to fiduciary rules, I wouldn't wait around for legislators to figure out exactly how this is all going to work. Ask for yourself if your advisor is a fiduciary.
And be prepared for the fact that he may not know what it actually means.
And then number two, 12 reasons not to roll your 401k into an IRA. I know of one, maybe two, but I think there's plenty of compelling reasons if you're willing to do just a smidge of homework to go the other way. All right, let's get into it, OG. Got your sleeves rolled up?
Let's do it. I'm ready.
Our first letter comes to us from Katie. Katie says, hey guys, new listener here looking for some advice. Katie, where have you been? We have been waiting around for Katie and finally she's here.
It's about time.
It is. I'm 22 years old, recently graduated from college, and I've been working for a steady income for about 6 months now. My company pays for my housing and will continue doing so for the next year and a half.
She's in the army. Got it.
So I have some extra income to play with. So far, I've been putting it all, about $1,500 a month, toward my student loans. And at this rate, I'll have them paid off by the end of the year. That's pretty sweet.
Okay.
My question is, what to do with my income after I pay off my loans? I'm already contributing heavily to my 401k, but I'd like to start some sort of savings or investment account for shorter term expenses, like possibly going back to school, vacations, wedding, etc. Not opposed to stocks, but I don't want to be the one managing stock investments. I'm very good with managing my money, but I don't know anything about the available options for this and which one I should pursue. It'd be great if you guys could answer this question on the show. Point me in the right direction for any available resource. Thanks so much. Guess what, Katie? We're going to answer it on the show, and we're going to start with yours. I love this fact that she's got the rest of the year to get some knowledge, right? She's going to finish paying off her student loans first. Think, Katie, at 22, that's a great idea. And by the end of the year, she'll be ready to start with a coherent plan. So what do you think, OG?
First things first, we got to make sure that we've got a pretty decent cash reserve in place. So I'd like that to be the next $10,000 or $15,000, give or take. After that's done, or maybe it's done already, and you're working on the student loans after your cash reserve is built, the next thing you want to do is start making a list of those medium and long-term type things. So you've got things like you mentioned trips or wedding plans or going back to school. You want to put timetables on those things. Anything less than 3 years, that's also going to go to cash. Every bank will allow you to open multiple bank accounts. We use Ally, got it from Magnify Money, but we use it because we can label the accounts the way that we want. And so we've got an account that's for our cash reserve, an account that's for our mortgage payment, an account that's for our kids' tuition payments. And so in a snapshot, we can look and see where each one of those buckets are relative to where they need to be for the upcoming month. You could do something like that too. You could say, I've got my travel account, I've got my going back and get my MBA account, and I got my cash reserve account. Once those are done and you've got the kind of list of timetables and how far away it is and how much money you need, then you just start directing the dollar amounts to have it reach your goal. If you say, you know, I'm going to need $4,000 a month for my annual travel budget, well, we know that's $350 a month of that $1,500. If you want to set aside $1,000 a month so that you can build up enough money to go to grad school in 3 years from now, then you know that you'll have $36,000 for grad school 3 years from now. Longer term goals, lots of different places. M1's a great resource. Schwab, I'm not a big fan of the Wealthfront Betterment things for a lot of reasons, but any brokerage account will do. Fidelity, Vanguard, pick your poison.
Great points, OG. And also, I want to address the individual stock. She says she doesn't want to manage a stock portfolio. The great thing that a lot of 22-year-olds don't know and is that indexes and mutual funds take care of that for you a lot. There's not as much to manage as you think that there is. I've used an analogy a lot, OG. I'm sure you probably use this analogy that you're out in the backyard throwing a baseball and you accidentally throw it at the house. Your kid accidentally throws it at the house. Somebody is in trouble with mom because they break the window. How much do you have to replace? Got to replace that entire window. Or if you have one of those French pane windows, you know, with the wood and a bunch of different little panes, let's say that there's 9 different panes, and not the ones we had when I grew up, by the way, where it was really like a plastic insert and you took them out and you washed the window and then you put the plastic insert back in.
You're right.
But a true French pane window, you put the ball through the window. How much do you have to replace? Just that one pane. A mutual fund or an exchange traded fund will be much more like the French pane window, where if something goes bad with one company, you don't lose all of your investment. Because as an example, if you invest in ticker symbol IVV, which is the S&P 500, what you'll find is that you have 500 of the biggest companies in America. And if something bad happens to one of those companies, you still have the other 499 in there. So managing it and diversifying is much easier than you think that it may be. I think that's a common misconception, OG, with people just out of college, is that they think, oh, stocks, I can't follow. If Kraft Heinz has another bad day, I got a full-time job. I won't be able to withstand it.
And that's why I think a lot of these things, ETFs and mutual funds in particular, especially early on, you know, while you've got all this other stuff going on in your life, it's just way easier to do that rather than trying to day trade your way to success.
Yeah. Thanks for the question, Katie, and congratulations on starting early. That is fantastic. Our next letter comes to us from Tom. Tom says, I'm planning on rolling over a 401k. Oh, Robert Lawton says, don't do it, Tom. No, I'm joking. planning on rolling over a 401k, which contains both pre-tax and after-tax contributions. Oh boy. I understand that two separate checks can be cut by the plan administrator in order to direct the pre-tax portion to a traditional IRA and the after-tax portion to a Roth IRA. I see where he's going. Specifically, with regard to the rollover of the after-tax portion, will there continue to be a delineation between the principal amounts with the growth in the new Roth IRA account? I'd like to retain my ability to withdraw the principal amounts prior to retirement without tax consequences. Great question there, Tom. So the question is, rollover Roth IRAs. Can he get at the principal pre-59 and a half?
Yeah, of course. You have to keep track of it. The IRS isn't going to do it for you. I mean, you are going to be the one that has to figure out how much that contribution amount was and how much of it is growth. So if you're 25 years old and doing this, you're asking a lot of yourself 30 years from now to try to say, well, how do I get this money out of here 30 years from now? Because there's not any place on a tax form or anything like that to put it. It's what happens is you'll get a 1099 that says you took money out, and then it will say taxable amount not determined. And then the IRS will go, well, how much should we tax you on this? Or how much should we penalize you on it? And it will be up to you to say nothing. And then if ever they come back and say, how do we know not to tax you? Then you have to provide that information. So yeah, you'll be figuring out, you'll be the one that has to keep track of that. That's all I can say about that. Well, that's all I'm going to say about that.
I think that's all there is to say. Thanks for that question, Tom. Drew is up next. Drew says, I have a question about the five-year rule for taking your contributions from a Roth IRA. Not that I plan to do it anytime soon. We got lots of Roth IRA questions today, don't we? Is the five-year waiting period just from the time you made your first contribution to your account, and then thereafter you can take all contributions at will, or does the five-year waiting period apply to each contribution you make and subject to 5 years before you can touch it? Thanks for all you guys do. I have learned a lot from you guys and love the show. Keep up the great work. Drew, you got to keep that to yourself. Don't share that. You'll ruin our reputation. But I think we got an answer for you, and it actually is not difficult. OG?
It's from the day you put your first money in, which is why it always makes sense to get something in right away. If you don't have one yet, open it.
Yeah, open that thing as quickly as you can.
$100.
Because from then on, in year number six, and this is why with people struggling with debt, if you have a Roth IRA that's open over 5 years, I don't love to do this, but if you're struggling with debt, and you don't have your cash reserve yet, this emergency fund, cash reserve, rainy day fund, go ahead and put it in your Roth IRA, because then you make the contribution. Hopefully you don't have to take it back out. And as you and I have said on previous shows, OG, you can't go back and make that contribution later. Like if you miss a year, you can't make it back. So hopefully you don't need it. But if you do end up having an emergency, leave it in cash, but inside of your Roth IRA, if you're past year five for that Roth IRA. If you're under year five, then you just put money in a place. Hopefully that car can stay on jacks for 4 years while you wait for your money to get out.
Yep. Best thing you do is just start it up.
Thanks for that question, Drew. Looks like my coffee cup is empty. And Doug, very excited about the first day of spring. So I think it's time for some trivia.
Hey there, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and Joe's mom is going to love this. We're going to dazzle all of her Bridge Club friends with some of my amazing trivia. If you don't mind, let me try it on you first, though, okay? Here we go. Okay, ladies, listen up. Yeah, you too, Gertrude. Too loud? Okay, all right, I'll tone it down a little bit. Welcome to the season where allergy medicine sales skyrocket, charcoal makes its big rebound, and the phrase, go fly a kite, doesn't mean they want you to take a hike. Well, then again, maybe they do want you to take a hike, but with a kite, whatever. Here, ladies, is your delightful trivia question. How did spring get its name? I'll be back with the answer in just a moment.
What if you too could be balding and own your own podcast production company?
Think that would be too good to be true? Well, strap on the wow helmet, kids, because we're about to introduce you to Stacking Benjamins in the Can. Now, you too can create a moderately successful internet radio show from the comfort and privacy of your own mom's basement. That's right. Stacking Benjamins in the Can is the do-it-yourself kit that's creating tons of internet fun. What's included? Well, feast your eyes on this, kids. Open up your Stacking Benjamins in the Can, and you'll see 14 ways to talk about your latest trip to Bavaria. 18 of the worst bad dad jokes you ever heard. Your own barely relevant holiday calendar. A sealed container brimming with the smells of stale basement air and day-old pizza. Plus, one script chock full of segue ideas. And because there was still a little room, we also shoved in your very own Steak Brother story. All in the can. But that's not all. Think we can't do better? Oh, yes, we can. We've also thrown in the can 5 gratuitous references to OG's after-school activity, 3 boring tales about how cold it is in Detroit, and if you call in now, tons of free Sizzler coupons. How do you get it? You know that's not the question to ask. Oh, go ahead, ask us. How do I get it in the can? Here's the secret to Stacking Benjamins in the Can. Just head to your mom's basement, buy a microphone, and we'll take care of the rest. Stacking Benjamins in the can couldn't be easier. Still not sold? What if I told you Stacking Benjamins in the Can is gluten-free? That's right. Healthy, barely funny, and all stuffed into this refillable souvenir container. Call for yours today. Operators are standing by. No animals were harmed in the making of this recording.
Hey there, trivia nerds, and a big thank you to all of you for helping me practice before delivering this doozy of a springtime trivia question to Joe's Mom's Bridge Club. Here we go. Before the break, I asked... What, too loud again? All right, okay, okie dokie, let's take 2. Before the break, I asked this question. Where did the name spring from? The answer? Back in Old England, the season was referred to as Lent. Starting in the 14th century, people started calling it springing time, a reference to plants springing from the ground. Give it another century and the word was shortened to springtime. Wait a bit longer. You know how lazy people can be, and the productivity experts realized we could all save a few seconds a year by ixnaying the latter half of springtime, and that's how we arrived at the season we all know and love as spring. What's that? Doris, wait, whoa, Doris, what do you want? Spring! No, it's spring, not sting. Yeah, I know you love Sting. Yes? Yes, he's a very nice boy, Doris. Oh, my God. Well, hopefully I'm ready. See ya!
I think that guy's a little fired up about spring. I'm fired up about spring. But maybe you have a little ways to go. Hey, let's throw out the...
It'll be nice when it finally shows up in 6 weeks, huh?
It's going to be fantastic. Let's throw out the Haven Lifeline and tackle some of life's most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency put what you value most... OG, what do you value most?
Oh, this is easy. I'm going to say the blossoming oak trees and the reminder of spring every day when I take my Claritin pill.
You're loving some pollen in the air, huh?
Ah, it's a little polleny, yes.
It's so fun. Well, it's actually your loved ones and your time, and your time is much better spent with loved ones when you're not... Do you get itchy and scratchy? You get poofy? You can't breathe? What's the deal?
A little stuffy nose. I'm not a baby about it.
I'm just wondering because on those days that I'm mad at you, I'm going to have like a bed of flower pollen all around your chair.
Oh, that's fun.
Yes. It's back to this podcast sponsored by Murder Book, by the way. It is your loved ones and your time. That's why they've made buying quality term life insurance actually simple. If you head to StackingBenjamins.com/Haven Life now, You'll get a free quote. Not just that, you can also look up how much insurance you need, which I really like their insurance tool to find out how much you need, because unlike most tools I see, it's actually a range they give you. And people that are true industry experts know that life insurance isn't just a set number. There's a range. And they go over all that on their tool. StackyBenjamins.com/HavenLife. And today, we're going to throw out the lifeline to our new friend, Elise. Say hi, Elise.
Hi, Joe and OG. My name is Elise, and I've been listening to your podcast for about a year and a half. I have a question for you that I haven't heard you discuss on your podcast before. I have a question about pensions. I'm a librarian in New Jersey, and I have a pension plan through work. However, when you talk about retirement plans on your podcasts, I've never heard you or many other podcasts mention pensions. I'm not really sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing to have a pension. It's 7.5% of my salary, which is matched by my employers. But I don't know if I should also be investing in another retirement plan as well. I have about $55,000 in student loan debt, and I'm working on trying to pay that down. But as I'm young, I'm 28, and I've heard that it's really important to start saving for your retirement in your 20s. I want to make the most out of my time and the most opportunity for it to grow. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on pensions. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for the question, Elise. And you know what? We have talked about pensions, but it's been quite a long time. If you want to know a good documentary about pensions, go way back in the archives and listen to the Broken Eggs. Just put Broken Eggs in the archive. Remember that documentary, OG, that really talks about pension systems in America and just about retirement being broken in general. But let's dive into a pension, OG. What should Elise do?
I think it's really important to recognize that the difference between a defined benefit plan and a defined contribution plan, and what you have is a defined benefit plan. So there's a formula somewhere that says with your provider that says, if you work these number of years, we take this average of your income, we multiply it by this number, and here's what your pension turns out to be. And it's a wonderful thing, except for when it's not. A lot of times pensions, especially the pension that you might have, would be like a government type pension probably. The problem is that they're funded with taxes and notoriously underfunded, as a matter of fact. So it's very difficult to count on the full value of your pension, especially when you've got 30 or 40 years before you'll actually claim it. The other thing I want you to be aware of is that you may be contributing to a pension at that 7.5% range. Your employer may be matching it at 7.5%, but that may be in lieu of Social Security contributions. There are some jobs out there where you're not actually earning Social Security credits right now because your employer, and there's a few of them, and everyone's different, but there's a few of them that don't actually participate in Social Security. So effectively what you're doing, if that's the case, you're not actually even getting a pension. You're just getting your own Social Security, basically. You're creating your own Social Security fund, which we all know, of course, you could never live on Social Security in its entirety, you know, and have that be the entirety of your retirement plan. So I would double check and make sure that you're earning both Social Security credits and doing pension contributions. And then, yes, it does make sense to save outside of that, partially because you'll have better access to investment choices. Your pension will probably grow at a much slower rate, even if they offer you a lump sum, a buyout opportunity down the line. And when you get to retirement, it's not going to be as much money as it could be if you were investing it, you know, over the next 35 or 40 years. So I agree that you have to do a little bit of savings. It sounds like you're doing what you can for retirement right now. I'd actually recommend that you go back to your student loans and knock those out, because if you're not careful, $55,000 of student loans at 28 turns into $50,000 of student loans at 40. And that's pretty disheartening as well. So I would work really tirelessly on that in addition to the current savings plan that you have. And then once that's done, then kind of reflect on where everything is. And maybe it's time to work with the 457 plan if you have one available, or open a Roth or whatever the case may be.
Does it make sense for Elise to look into what her expected payout would be from the pension?
Yeah, I think so. Except you also have to recognize that it's very difficult to calculate that in today's dollars, because a lot of times pensions are based on your average income, or, you know, your top 5 years, or your top 3 years, or the best 3 years. There's all different formulas. And you think about, just, you know, if you make $50,000 a year today, if you just get regular 3% pay raises from now until 20, 25 years from now, you're going to be making $100,000 a year in 25 years. So your pension is going to be based on that number, not today's number. And it gives us a little false sense of security, because then you look at the math and you say, oh my goodness, they're going to be paying me $60,000 a year in pension income. That's awesome. Well, yeah, but the cost of living is also going to increase by double over that 20 or 25 year period too. So I think it's a good exercise to have at least a generic idea of what it might look like. But being this far away from retirement at 28, probably the earliest you can access your retirement is maybe 55 or 60. It would become more meaningful, I think, later on, like in your mid-40s, to start doing some calculations on it.
Yeah. Thanks for the question, Elise. Great question, and timely, because we haven't talked about pensions in a little while. Usually, sadly, we've had news about pensions failing, and the only discussion we've had about that was recently that Omaha pension debacle going on. Looks like we've got time for one more letter, and this one comes to us from Chester. Chester says, hey guys, like your show a lot and can't wait to actually learn something one day. Maybe today will be the day. Yes, Chester, today is the day.
Maybe the day.
Let's do it. Thanks for taking my question. I have something retirement related for you. I'm 34. I make between $80,000 and $100,000 a year. I live in New York City, where taxes are high.
New York City.
My company has a regular regular and or Roth 401k plan with a 4% match. I contribute mainly to the Roth 401k, but concerned I'm making an error. I could instead max out a regular 401k and contribute to the Roth IRA afterwards. But that's not so much the crux of my question, but it's related. Here's my question. My current partner is from a wealthy family, and we'll be getting married in the next few years. I wonder if that means when I'm older, I'll inevitably be in a higher tax bracket as a result of inheritance. Not sure if that even qualifies as taxable income, and not sure if it'll affect our tax bracket. If it doesn't bump us up, maybe I max a traditional 401k and then move on to a Roth IRA with additional savings. Chester. So, possible inheritance, wondering if that bumps up a tax bracket. Also wondering about Roth IRA versus traditional. How does that all work together, OG?
I'm very hesitant to count on inheritance money for any purposes until it's actually in my bank account. But that being said, generally speaking, a normal grandpa got hit by a bus, he left me 50 grand, that's not taxable. An IRA that grandpa leaves you could be taxable, but usually the taxation comes from what the money does once you have it. You know, if it generates income or produces capital gains or whatever the case may be. Unless you're talking about, we're going to inherit $47 million, I doubt that it has a really profound impact on your tax situation. Now, your partner and their income from regular working will likely change your tax bracket. That'll have an impact. You know, if you have two people who each earn $100,000, the tax bracket for a married couple at $200,000 is not the same as two 100,000 people. You know, they call it the marriage penalty. It's like 1.5 times it, basically. So I wouldn't really concern myself too much with the inheritance affecting your taxable income. And if it's big enough that it actually does affect it, then it's a real load of money and you won't really care about little old Roth contributions at that point anyway. You'll be, you know, taking the helicopter from one building to the next, you know, for your lunch appointments. But I like the Roth. I've never known the government to take back something that they've given as it relates to an entitlement, but I have seen tax laws change. And the fact that right now you can contribute, if you're 35 years old, $19,000 into a 401k, have that all be tax-free for the rest of everyone's life until the end of time, and you can do another $6,000 into a Roth IRA, you can effectively put away $25,000 a year that never is taxed by the federal government ever until the world ends.
Ta-da!
Sounds like a pretty good deal to me compared to I get a little bit of a tax break today. Yeah. And you're in New York City, so this is different, you know, because you've got high state income taxes, high city income taxes. So that definitely has an impact. But just the idea of never paying taxes ever.
This is, I think, OG, the reason why you can't make these decisions without looking at the full picture, because with taxes, there's three different ways to look at it. You can have pre-tax money. Chester's talking about two of these. One is money goes in pre-tax and then you pay it out later. You get taxed later on. That would be like the 401k option. The other, the Roth 401k option, is the type of investment where you pay tax on the investment when it goes in. When it comes out tax-free. And as long as you, you know, thread the needle and don't violate any of the conditions where it's not tax-free, you can take out Roth IRA money tax-free, Roth 401k money tax-free. But then there's also a third one where you've got flexible money. And having that tax diversification, I think, OG, is every bit as important as having the right asset diversification, the right investment choice. Like choosing the right tax shelter, I think, is much more of a big umbrella tax question here. And it looks like with all of these planning things coming up for Chester, that's that may be easy to do for him. But obviously, knowing the specific amounts, I think OG is going to play into this, don't you?
Well, and that's why I think it's really important to, like you said, look at this on a case-by-case basis. And frankly, it's also going to change year to year.
Right. Yeah,
you know, good point. Like how things are going for this year will not necessarily be the same thing as how it goes next year, you know? So you have to evaluate it. If you want to be ultra, ultra, ultra precise, you evaluate it on an annual basis.
Thanks for the question, Chester. And unfortunately, looking at the clock, that's going to do it for today. We still have more letters. I'm so excited. We have more and more. If we haven't gotten to yours yet, hang in there, because we will continue taking them every day. And then hopefully in the next couple of weeks, have another letters episode. That was a lot of fun. Lots of Roth IRA questions, pension questions. You stackers come up with some phenomenal questions for us. So thanks for that. If you've got a
keep
question
them coming.
Yes. Amen. If you've got a question for the show, stackybenjamins.com/voicemails, the Haven Lifeline. And that is the way to score the amazing Brad Lark design, greatest money show on earth t-shirt. If you want to look at all Brad's designs, by the way, that's stackybenjamins.com/shirts. Also, if you're somebody looking for comprehensive financial planning help in your corner, OG and his firm are taking clients. Head to stackybenjamins.com/OG. Just the letters OG. All right. That's going to do it for today. Thanks again, everybody. Doug, take it from here, man. What should we have learned on the first day of spring?
Well, I'll tell you, jury's still out on what any of those folks might have learned in today's episode. But I'll tell you what I learned. First, that fiduciary rule? Don't wait for laws to be passed to do the right thing. Talk to your advisors about whether they're fiduciaries whenever you hire an advisory. I like that word, fiduciaries. Anyway, second, rolling over an old retirement plan, don't take advice from people who are paid either to move your money or to keep it as is. While you might take away some great points from the discussion, they might leave out some salient points for the opposite idea. But the big lesson? Don't talk to Joe's mom's friend Doris about spring. That woman's still stuck on Sting. No, 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 Doris, no. Sting is not coming here, Doris. No, he's not coming. But if he came, he would not be wearing his hot pants. Well, I don't know if he'll wear hot pants because he isn't coming. I said spring. Oh, my God, woman. Special thanks to you for supporting our show. Want to help the show and support independent bookstores? We now have a relationship with Powell's Books. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/Powells, that's P-O-W-E-L-L-S, and you can buy your money books from a great bookstore, and they'll send a little thank you our way for helping them keep the doors open. Thanks to everyone who's already used the link. The rest of you, get on it! This show was created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I swear the worst part about coming over to Joe's mom's house is having to put on pants. SB Podcast may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor.
I went to see a movie yesterday that I'm super excited about, OG, that I'd love to talk about here. This was a documentary by Peter Jackson, the great film director Peter Jackson, and it's called They Shall Not Grow Old.
I was 16 years old and my father allowed me to go.
I was just turned 17 at the time.
I was 16.
And I was 15 years.
When they came to us, they were frightened children and had to be made into soldiers.
Boys, here he comes. We're in the pictures.
I gave every part of my youth to do a job.
To recognize last year's 100-year anniversary of the signing of the armistice, which ended World War I, a consortium of British museums went to Peter Jackson and said, we have all this World War I footage and we want to use it in a novel way. And by the way, at the beginning of the documentary, Peter Jackson explains this, exactly what they told him to do. And he said, I have no idea. All I knew was I had to make something new with a bunch of old footage from World War I. And what they did was truly extraordinary, OG. They use recordings from people that were in World War I. There's no historian in the movie. There's no documentarian in the movie. It's the voices of actual soldiers telling their story and then photos from the war. And at the beginning, it's old black and white silent films because, of course, that's what it was. But what Peter Jackson did that was groundbreaking and revolutionary was they took those and not only did they colorize them, but in World War I, you had the person shooting the film had to use a hand crank to make the film move, and different people crank that at different speeds. They made it so those were completely one speed. They also were silent films, so they added in noises, and they did it very scientifically how they created the noises. Giving an example, they brought in some of the top lip readers in the world and brought in actors to do the voices. In fact, there's a very popular old black and white film, which shows just before an attack, one of the unit leaders, a captain, giving what really is a motivational speech to his troops. And you can tell that's what he's doing, but he's reading off a little piece of paper. Peter Jackson and his team went back and they found that piece of paper. And Peter Jackson said he took his phone and he just started reading it and they sped it up and slowed it down and they were able to make his mouth move at almost exactly the same speed. So they knew he was reading from this same piece of paper. So for the first time ever, you know exactly what this guy was saying to his troops. And incredibly powerful. The movie itself is powerful. It's just over an hour. And Peter Jackson tells you at the beginning, he says, hey, at the end, we're going to tell you how we did all this. The best part of this, and by the way, it's incredible on its own. The best part of this film is Peter Jackson explaining how they took these old silent films and used current technology to show you what World War I might have been like. Incredibly powerful. They Shall Not Grow Old. Well, 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 worth the time to go watch it.
I was going to say, I saw that they had that in theaters, but only for limited periods of time.
Yeah.
Last time I was at the theater, it was like, it'll be here Tuesday.
I just saw it 2 weeks ago, and frankly, I was surprised it was still there, and there were a lot of people in the theater. So I'm guessing the reason it's still in theaters is because audiences continue to come out to see it. So hopefully if it's in a theater near you, go see it. But if not, this will be on video very shortly, and I think it's well worth it.